Yeah, my guest in the studio is one of Sydney's most in-demand baritone saxophone players and woodwind doublers. For years, he's been keeping the flame alive, keeping the flame of Charles Mingus and his music alive via his nine-piece powerhouse. Steve Fitzmaurice, welcome back to Now's the Time.
Thank you very much, Frank, for having me. Yeah, it's great to be back.
It's been 6 years. It's been 6 years since you're in the hot seat here, chatting on Now's the Time. And for listeners that don't know of you and don't know of the ensemble, can you briefly remind us about your musical background, how you came to the baritone saxophone and the reeds, and of course, how you came to the music of Charles Mingus?
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess there's a few questions to get into there, but I can actually answer two in one, really. Baritone and Mingus came at the same time for me. I remember still the first tune I ever heard of Mingus. It was a tune called Tensions, and it sucked me in straight away. And he writes so well for the baritone. I was in first year at the Con playing alto at the time, and I just had to find myself a baritone and switch to it. And like I said, the last 3 years of my time at the Con, I was on baritone purely from hearing Charles Mingus. He just, like his idol Duke Ellington, he writes for the players in his band and the instruments in his band. And this tune, Tensions, it's typical of Mingus. It's just got all these lines, chaotic lines that overlap and turn the tune, you know, crazy and crazier. But the underlying thing is this baritone line, this really sweet, lovely baritone line that just continues the whole way through underneath. And yeah, it really got me. So that's baritone and Mingus. As far as the band itself, we've been going for about almost 10 years now. So Mingus is almost 100 and Mingus Amongst Us is almost 10. And that, yeah, started back in the days when I was doing musical theatre, actually. I was touring with Jersey Boys in Melbourne, and mentioned to the other horn players in the band that I'd, you know, kind of had this project in mind, and I was arranging Charles Mingus music to eventually one day put a band together. And they thought that sounded great and called up Bennett's Lane and said, let's put it on. And I was like, okay, I don't really have enough tunes done yet, but let's do it, and kind of quickly wrote a few more. And since then, I just kind of keep adding to the repertoire. We've got about, you know, 40, 50 songs now that we can choose from and play.
Yeah. Well, that's quite expansive. And I was going to ask you actually how the band itself, how the music and how the ensemble has evolved, I guess, during that period of time. So who is in the all-important bass chair?
That's Hannah James.
Hannah James,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and she does a great job.
Yeah. Well, she's the sort of the opposite end of the big, muscular Charles Mingus.
That's right.
So petite but plays the bass with a lot of punch.
Yeah, that's right. She's got the fire. She, but yeah, looks nothing like Mingus at all. yeah, that's right. No, it's been fantastic. One of the funny things that happens out of COVID, like before COVID, I guess, the first like 7 years of the band, it was always a different player in every chair, you know, each time we played, we sort of had a weekly residency for a year in the Cross, and it wouldn't be the same lineup, you know, from week to week. But after COVID, you know, there's not a lot of work out there and people are suddenly more available. So we've actually had like a really consistent lineup where it hasn't changed and the band's just gone from strength to strength, and I'm loving it. Yeah.
Well, of course, the whole concept isn't a new one globally. I recall being in New York City in 1996, and I think the Mingus Big Band itself started in the early 90s, and I was lucky enough to capture it live at the Club Fez.
Yeah.
Down in the village. And at the time, I think the baritone saxophone player in the group was Ronnie Cuba.
Yeah, well, he was with them a lot, and I wish I saw the band a couple of times, but never with Ronnie, and he's my favourite. I would love to see him with it. But yeah, I saw them at the same club and was lucky enough. I remember the bouncer or the person at the door saying, would you like to sit with Sue Mingus for the night? Because I guess she goes along each week and kind of has no one to, well, sit with each time, and goes along and is quite happy for a stranger to buy her drinks through the night. And that was great because the whole band had to come up to the table to get their checks and everything, so you got
wow.
to meet everyone.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah, to sit with Charles's wife, you know, it was pretty cool.
And do you think that's, you know, that sort of planted the seeds of what you've now created, the Mingus Amongst Us Big Band?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love the big band. And my version being a 9-piece band, I kind of went for an in-between. I love Mingus's small group stuff with the freedom and the energy, and I love the arrangements of the big band. So I wanted to kind of, I mean, to begin with, for a lot of his music, you need at least 9 players because there's so many different lines going on and everything. But I also wanted to keep it free so that it wasn't quite a big band. There was still a lot of, you know, collective improvisation and freedom to go for the players, you know.
Steve, he really is one of the major contributors to the history of jazz. His output as a composer offers such a platform for emerging artists to sort of to leap from. You know, his music was always regarded as avant-garde, coming out of the history of Duke Ellington. How would you describe the legacy of Charles Mingus in terms of both his impact as a bass player, but also his impact as a composer in the legacy of jazz?
Yeah, that's right. Well, he really did stretch through the era, the bebop era. Like, he would, you know, obviously he was first playing with Charlie Parker and all those fantastic players through bebop, and then did take a more avant-garde direction, and his own band with Eric Dolphy, you know, would really get. There was always potential for it to get as out there as the musicians ever wanted to go, basically. They had so much freedom. Yet, as you say, the Duke Ellington influence, it was always just steeped in blues and gospel and tradition. Like, that's what it really appeals to me. It's just that encapsulate all these styles, you know.
Mm.
And I just love the blues and the gospel side of it. So as far sort of, you know, out there that it got, it was still always just rooted in the blues for me.
You know, I feel sometimes that even, you know, Frank Zappa's band was an extension of,
yeah,
you know, in some ways an extension of Charles Mingus.
For sure.
And there are many out there that you can you can point to.
Ronnie Cuba played in both of those, actually. Ronnie Cuba played with Charles Mingus before he died, and then also in Frank Zappa's band.
So. Yeah.
Like you mentioned, you know, going back over the history of the band and how the repertoire has just built and built, one thing I know I'll be putting in, I've got now 4 arrangements that have vocals in them. So, and we've got Joe Fabro joining us on vocals this time, which will be really interesting. I've never had a female vocalist. It's normally been Dan Barnett, who plays trombone in the band, or George Washing Machine, but they're not around, so Joe's going to come and do it. And she said the keys work for her and all of that sort of stuff, so I can't wait to hear her version of them. But so the vocal tunes are Joni Mitchell's version of lyrics to Goodbye Pork by Hat.
Okay.
We'll be doing that one, which is great. And then also Elvis Costello wrote some lyrics to Mingus's tune E's Flat, R's Flat 2. So they've both got lyrics. And then a few tunes Mingus did had spoken word in them. There's one called Don't Let It Happen Here that starts off with that famous speech on freedom, the one that starts like at first they came for the communists and I said nothing because I wasn't communist. Anyway, it's this beautiful long speech, and then turns into a typical chaotic Mingus song where he's screaming over the top of it and everything. So she'll be doing that, and then there's another one, Freedom, which which has lyrics too. Yeah, so that's a new addition for tunes with vocals.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely do them the rest of the night. I don't have a clue yet. I've got to think about it.
Well, that's what we like as far as jazz gigs, the spontaneity.
That's it.
Now, what about, finally, what about the prospect of taking this group on the road? I mentioned it to another artist a few weeks ago whereby, you know, the latest sort of cycle as far as this COVID pandemic has taken artists, it seems as though it might be easier these days than what it was, say, 2 years ago,
yeah,
two and a half years ago, to put a band on the road again, because people in the regions are sort of just hanging out for live music once again.
That's a good point. I guess I have, just been happy doing the monthly thing at Foundry, plus festivals whenever they come up. We've got one soon at the Con Jazz Festival. But always in the back of my mind, I have wanted to go on tour with the band, and top of the bucket list is actually to go to Japan, purely because I want to go there. So why not organise a tour? But I was thinking that if I was going to try something like that, I should at least see if I could, you know, have a practice run and tour up and down the coast and see if I can keep everyone together.
Yeah.
And do that first. So I would love to do a tour. I've just at the moment I've got a 16-month-old baby, so that's why I've been happy just doing the residency and I'll kind of. But I mean, they take a long time to organise. I should think about it now for the future, for sure.
Steve Fitzmaurice, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.